Oh, where would it be?
Busy looking at the cookies, you know.
I had one of those sesame ones.
I forgot to put the pagers over there, so they're coming around right now. Hey, we have an official pager. This is from the hotel on Pesach, the official paper distributors. Didn't want to take his work away, you know. All right, you can turn down your cell phones if you don't mind. Yes, pages are coming around. Boker Tov. Before we start, this morning's shiur is dedicated by Arlene Saslow, who is here. Ruth Friedson is here. Grandchildren, great-grandchildren, loving memory of Dov Ber Ben Shimshon Alter. His 10th yahrzeit. Okay. And maybe in honor of Pesach Sheni, there's some refreshments here. Except I expected to see a matzah. How many of you had matzah bride this morning? There we go. We have mezumen. Oh, you burnt the lulav now? Okay. So we will talk about Pesach Sheni today. Today's the 14th of Adar. And 14th of Iyar, excuse me. See, I was just checking to see if you're listening. Yeah. That's all. Yeah.
I have a question left over from last.
Let's hear it quickly. Yeah.
You were talking about what's supposed to happen when the majority of people
Okay.
About the question of Nevuah is supposed to come back and what Rambam says.
Okay, so just Patrick, to round out that last point of the shiur last week, we talked about what might happen in the emerging Acharita Yamim, end of days, with specifically with regard to the restoration of prophecy. So there are, there's no question that there's a tradition that prophecy will be restored. The only question is, from where do we know that? The Rambam derives it, and it's in the 12th chapter of Lechot Malachim, the very, very end of the Mishneh Torah, from the famous pasuk that we read on the Haftarah of Shabbat HaGadol, from the end of Malachi, Hine Anochi Shaleach Lachem Et Eliyahu Navi Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem HaGadol VaNora, which seems to indicate that Eliyahu Navi is the man is returning. Rama makes a comment: Yesh Min HaChachamim SheOmrim. There are some of the sages who claim SheKodem Sheba Mashiach Yevo Eliyahu, that prior to the coming of Mashiach, Eliyahu will appear. It's a very strange language. There are some Chachamim who suggest, who claim, almost indicating that there are others. And perhaps not just others, but most actually don't believe this. Now, we grew up on this. We grew up on all the Eliyahu Navi songs of Motzei Shabbat, Eliyahu Navi, and Eliyahu Navi showing up at the Brit, and Eliyahu Navi showing up at the Seder, and Eliyahu Navi symbolically ushering in Yemot HaMashiach. They say one of the reasons that we actually have given Motzei Shabbat an Eliyahu Navi theme, as it's expressed in the Zmirot of Motzei Shabbat, is because there's a tradition that Mashiach won't come on Shabbat, because that Eliyahu Navi wouldn't come on Friday, telling us that tomorrow Mashiach will come, because we have Shabbos cooking on our minds, and we just can't deal with tomorrow Yomot HaMashiach. So the earliest opportunity after Shabbat, the Eliyahu Navi might possibly show up and bring the good news, is Motzei Shabbat. So that's why Motzei Shabbos becomes the moment of the Besorah, the good news, and we sing about Eliyahu Navi. Fine. But the Rambam says, Yesh min hachachamim shomrim. There are some who claim that this is the explanation of the pasuk, Hinei anochi sholech lachem et Eliyahu Navi. Well, that's a pasuk. So what do you mean, some claim? What does the Rambam do with that pasuk? The Rambam says it's not Eliyahu the person in that pasuk, but he's just the example of a Navi, of a prophet who will, prophecy will return. And it is stylistic and characteristic of Tanakh to drop names sometimes when making a larger point, similar to, with regard to Melech HaMashiach in Sefer Yecheskel, Melech David Ro'e Alechem. V'David Avdi, I'm sorry, V'David Avdi Melech Alechem. Now, is it David HaMelech, the person? He's going to be the one who's going to come back? Not necessarily. So why does the Navi say Ve'avdi David or David Avdi Melech Alehem? Because it's from the Davidic line. So David HaMelech represents the first king, and he kicks into motion Malchut Beit David, the Davidic monarchy, and descendants and so on. So too, the Rambam understands Eliyahu Navi. Hinanachi Shalech Lachem et Eliyahu Navi. The point is, prophecy will be restored. But he says, look, there are some who believe that Eliyahu, the man, will come back. Lo yada adam mayu achayu. Nobody really knows what's going to happen until it happens. Rambam cautions, just patience, and says, sit back and relax, and we'll see what happens. And when it happens, it'll happen. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be locked into any one theory that it has to be this way or that way. Because the Rambam says, when you read the Psukim of Tanakh, you can come up with conflicting orders, chronological sequential order of how the Geulah, the redemption, will unfold, and therefore it's just teaching us that there are multifaceted possibilities here, and you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. I remember Rabbi Norman Lamb in a towering article in Tradition, which is the quarterly that comes out from the Rabbinical Council of America, the RCA. He put out an article, I think it's back in 1973, 74, called The Ideology of Nature Karta, and which is the Satma Chassidim, devoutly anti-Zionist and so on. So he says, why should we as modern religious Zionist, why should we be involved in studying even the Nature Karta? So first he says that if you want to argue with somebody in any debate, you have to really know the other side. And to know the other side, you have to study it, and then you can debate it. You can deal with point by point and so on. But then he makes an interesting point. He says, look, we don't think that our belief is that it's not happening the way the Satmar Rebbe thought it was going to happen. But it is very, very sobering thought to know that maybe the way you think it's going to happen may not happen that way either. So he said, therefore, it's always a good idea to take a peek about what others think might happen. So it's true, the Satma ideology is rather radical and off the binge and off the radar, as we say, in terms of our own thinking. But nevertheless, it's very humbling to know that we're not the only one in town, and that you should always have an open mind to listen to other opinions. So again, he's not saying that maybe they're right. All he's saying is that maybe we're wrong. Maybe we have an ideology that may not turn out to be exactly the way we thought. Don't blame God. That's what the Rambam says. Lo yada adam mayu achayu. So there could be restoration of Nevuah. But according to the Rambam, there's a big machloka dispute between Rambam and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari about the necessary prerequisites to be a prophet. According to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, many of us sitting here right now could potentially become prophets. Why? Because he says you have to be a God-fearing Jew, performing of mitzvot, and basically that you're Kadosh Baruch Hu is happy with not that we haven't slipped here and there, but say that we've all slipped here and there. But as we say, b'sach hakol, bottom line, we're doing what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu has a tremendous reservoir of such people he can pull out to make them prophets. And Yehuda Halevi says this is what happened at Har Sinai. Really, everybody became a prophet at that time. Rambam does not accept this at all. Rambam believes that you have to be gifted intellectually, and you have to define your character that has to be the ultimate and excellence in character, and you have to prepare yourself for this. You have to work on your sense of imagination. He gives a whole prerequisite of what it means to be a Navi, which means that according to the Rambam, most of the Jews will never become Naviim, even in the era of prophecy. It's only a select few. And only those select few, after qualifying, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu has got to assist the person and by delivering the goods and making him into a prophet. Rambam speaks about Yirmiyahu's prime student, Baruch ben Neriah, and basically consoles him at the end of the Sefer, I think it's Perek Mem Hei, in Yirmiyahu. He says, look, from my point of view, you were 100%. You know, you did the job. You passed the course 100% with stars, with an excellent student. But it's my fault that a Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't tune in. That's not my fault. I did what I could do to bring you there. And the Rambam says these kind of people were called B'nei HaNevi'im. Whenever you see the phrase B'nei HaNevi'im in Tanakh, it means students in training. They were Nevi'im in training. Like we used to have in camp, CIT, counselor in training. So you have NIT, Navi in training. The Navi in training is a B'nei HaNevi'im in Tanakh. V'yishachat mi'B'nei HaNevi'im tza'aka l'lisha le'mor. In Malachim Bet Per Dalet and other places you have B'nei HaNevi'im. So this is what the Rambam believes, that you could potentially become part of the B'nai HaNevi'im. And the Rambam in the 12th century in Egypt is preparing for prophecy. Because he saw himself as that kind of caliber, both intellectually and in personal behavior and personality. And he was working on the possibility that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to renew prophecy in his generation, at least he would be a suitable candidate. That's something for a person to make that claim. No different, by the way, I mean similar, not exactly, the Chofetz Chaim, who died in 1933 at not a young age. According to one opinion, he was 105. I actually saw an obituary from the New York Times in 1933. It says Chofetz Chaim dies 105. But some reliable people told me he only made it to his upper 90s. You know, he didn't really cross the 100. But what's the difference? He wasn't a younger man. He wasn't a young man, that's for sure. And 1933 he dies. He, in his yeshiva in Rotten, began to introduce the daily study of Seder Kodashim, the Gemarot that deal with Beit HaMikdash activity. Because he said, look, he's a Kayan. And he said, maybe the reason that there's no Beit HaMikdash, because there's really nobody around who's capable of doing the service in Beit HaMikdash, the Avodah. So maybe as part of bringing Beit HaMikdash, we have to do our thing, and that is to prepare ourselves to become Kohanim, which is, it's a sensational idea of that level of preparation. But to a certain degree, the Rambam too was preparing himself personally for the era of prophecy, of Nevuah. But it didn't happen in the 12th century, and we're still around 21st century. Maybe a little dyslexic, 21 and 12, but all right. But it's not here yet, and I don't see any Rambams on the horizon right now. Okay, so
a prerequisite was that the majority of Jews be in Eretz Yisrael.
No, prophecy did not require the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. The majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael was for mitzvot atliot ba'aretz, certain of the agricultural mitzvot. And that's it. That's it. The Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin says that mitzvot she'enan tzrichot noheget ba'aretz, noheget ba'aretz v'chein b'chutz la'aretz. And then you have to understand what the Ramban did with that in Parshat Achrimot. We just read it last week, where he says in chutz la'aretz, the real fulfillment of mitzvot is in Eretz Yisrael, even for all the other mitzvot, not just the agricultural. And that which we fulfill mitzvot in chutz la'aretz, Shabbat, Kashrut, Tefillin, and Tefillah, and everything, that's also in training. That's chinuch. So that when we get to Eretz Yisrael, we shouldn't be ignoramuses and morons, but the machinery should be properly oiled and geared up for proper performance. That's how the Ramban understood it. And that's why, I'm not such a big tzaddik, but Kops Eretz Yisrael, I've been inspired by Rabbi Gold. You know, he's bitten me a little bit. And because of that, so let's say a thing like Kiddush Levana. So Kiddush Levana, you can do Matzai Shabbat if the third day of after Rosh Chodesh, but you can still do it until the 14th of the month. And when I'm in Chutz La'aretz, and if it's the time they're doing Kiddush Levana, Matzai Shabbat, I won't do it. Because I know in 2-3 days I'm back in Eretz Yisrael, and I'd rather do it here. Because it's once a month, and so on. So too, I've had occasions where people get up on the plane 2 p.m. to daven mincha, when you're going to land in Eretz Yisrael an hour before sundown. So first of all, forget about the whole issue about davening on a plane, which is really problematic in itself. But why do that when you know you can daven mincha in Eretz Yisrael? And that, by the way, negates or overrides what's called zrizut, zrizim makdimim lemitzvot. Zrizim makdimim lemitzvot is a general concept in Torah. Don't delay. Just do it at your first opportunity. Mitzvah haba'a liyatcha al tachamitzena. Don't let the mitzvah sour if you have that opportunity. But sometimes you're allowed to do that. As let's say Brit Milah, the mitzvah is to do it first thing in the morning. But if nobody's going to show up at the Brit first thing in the morning, but at let's say 2 p.m, you're going to have a nice tzibur. So there's an allowance to postpone the Brit to later in the afternoon, in spite of zrizut, in spite of zrizim makdimin. So too, Eretz Yisrael clearly overrides Zrizut. Yeah.
Sorry, on that question about the if you were on a plane.
Yeah.
If you knew you're getting to Eretz Yisrael before Shkia, mm-hmm. but you weren't sure you were going to find a minyan, would it be better to?
That's a very, very good question. So my answer is, in accord, and I have adopted the opinion of Rav Vozna, Zechronu Livracha, the 102-year-old Paisik from Bnei Brak who passed away just 2-3 years ago. And he was a Talmud of Rav Maya Shapiro in the Chachmi Lublin Yeshiva. So Rav Vozna, in his Zichron Meir community, named after Rav Meir Shapiro, his Rebbe, said that we should not make minyonim on the airplane, and that we should be davening Shmonesrei in our seats. And I have enough experience, I can tell you in my dinosaur palm pilot, because my wife says it's a dinosaur, because I'm the last guy in this world who has a relic of a palm pilot. She actually photographed me in the Museum of Natural History a few years ago, next to the dinosaur, holding it up and saying these are two species of dinosaurs. So my dinosaur, everybody has mishigasim, so I always have mishigasim. I record every flight that I've flown 701 times. So having accrued 701 flights, I've accrued a lot of experience about minyanim on planes. And I see things that border on chil Hashem. Chil, nothing less than that, chil Hashem. And Rav Vozna is just 100% right. He wrote the tshuva for the Rav of El Al, who passed it out to all the various flight attendants. Flight attendants in their pocket have the tshuva from Rav Vozna, and I've actually seen a gentleman who was davening fervently Shmon Esrei. There was terrible turbulence, and she was begging the guy to sit down, and he, you know, hu b'shamayim in every sense of the word, you know, and she whips out this tshuva from Rav Vozna, and said, even this you don't believe? He just ignored her completely, like she wasn't there. In the language of the Gemara, keman deleita dami, she's not there. And it was a chil Hashem, a really, really chil Hashem. Because here you have, I don't want to tell you about incidents, I don't want to scare anybody, but there have been incidents with turbulence where people have gotten hurt. There have been incidents and turbulence where people have gotten killed. But when there's turbulence, there's a reason why they're telling you to sit down with the seatbelt. They're not doing it because they want it. They're doing it for you. And al pi halacha, you're not allowed to jeopardize your health and your safety because you're in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei. You sit down. So what do? So you start again. That's all. Beseda. You know, these things have happened. But you shouldn't have been starting in the first place. And then they make a minyan next to the bathroom where sometimes it's not appropriate. Then people come in and come out. The men and women. It's a disaster. Pashut a disaster. So these things have to be noted. All right, so that's the tail end of yesterday's year. Last week's year. Let's take a look at Pesach Sheni today. And of all things, the only thing I have on the page is Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam. In previous Shurim, we've related to Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam, which is the topic of this year's Shir. But today we're just going to look at four sections of the Rambam Sefer Mitzvot. Mitzvah Nun Hei, Mitzvah Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, and Nun Chet. Four in a row. And the Rambam talks about these four mitzvot in the context of korbanot, sacrifices. What's interesting is that the Rambam makes a division with regard to Pesach. Let's talk about our Pesach in Nisan. So he has a whole section in Zmanim, the third book of the Mishnah Torah, which is parallel 90%. To the Mishnayot, Seder Moed, which is Yomim Tovim, Zmanim, Chagim Uzmanim L'Sason. So there he has Hilchot Chametz U'Matzah. Fine, Chametz U'Matzah. So there he deals with everything you want to know about Chametz U'Matzah and Leila Seder. That's the last chapter of Masechet Psachim, the last chapter. The first seven chapters of Masechet Psachim is about the Korban Pesach. Masechet Psachim has eight chapters. Seven deal with the Korban Pesach. I'm sorry. Correction. Chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4 deal with Chametz Matzah. 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 deal with Korban Pesach. And 10 deals with the Leila Seder. Okay? I'll get it right now. Got it right. So it's five chapters and five chapters. But it's 5, 4, 1. That's your 10 chapters of Masechet Pesachim. So much so that the Meiri, Rabbeinu Menachem HaMeiri, end of the period of the Rishonim, towards the end of the 13th century, in South France, Provence, which means it's not Sfarad, it's not Ashkenaz, it was a third tradition, which unfortunately did not survive because of the bubonic plague, and the communities of Provence were obliterated from this map, and they integrated into either Ashkenaz or Sfarad. So you have the Chachmei Provence. One of the most famous names of the Chachmei Provence was the Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, who got a hold of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam when he was an old man, and he wrote his critical comments. But I'm talking about the Me'iri. Me'iri, in his lengthy commentary on all of Shas, Chidush HaMe'iri on Gemara, he has a nice introduction. And there, he talks about the order of the Shisha Sedrei Mishnah. Why Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put each Seder as he put it, why the internal order in each Seder, why it's there. And then he asks a very simple question. He says, you have Masechet Sukkah, that's in singular. Rosh Hashanah, singular. Yoma, which means the day, it's Yom Kippur, singular. Megillah, singular. Why is Pesachim in plural? It's Masechet Pesachim. So most people would think, because there's Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. That's a plausible answer. And indeed, in the Masechet, there is some discussion, not a lot, but some discussion, about Pesach Sheni. But that's not the reason why it's called Pesachim. He says that originally, before the days of the Geonim, the Masechet was divided into two sections. It was called Masechet Pesach Rishon and Masechet Pesach Sheni, which meant Masechet Pesach Rishon had five chapters. What we have today, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 10, which is all the laws about Chametz and Matzah and Leil HaSeder. And then there was Masechet Pesach Sheni, Volume 2, which was chapter what we have today, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. The five chapters that deal with the Korban Pesach. For some reason, in the days of the Geonim, they forged together Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, and they called it in the plural Masechet Pesachim. They indicated, they reminded us that once upon a time, it was two individual Masechtot, and that's why it's called Masechet Pesachim. The term Pesach Sheni that we use today, for today, Yud Dalet Iyar, is referred to in the Mishnah as Pesach Katan, the minor Pesach. It's not even called Pesach Sheni. It's called Pesach Katan, or Pascha Zeira in Aramaic, which means Pesach Katan. But they never used Pesach Sheni as the term in the Gemara. But it's called officially Pesach Katan. Sometimes they'll use the word Rishon Sheni, that yes, but when they refer to the date, it's called Pesach Katan. So the Rambam in his Mishnah Torah indeed separates the way it was before the Geonim forged them together. In Sefer Zmanim, he has the discussion of what would be in the Mishnah chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 10. That is Chametz Matzah and Leil HaSeder. That's what he has in his eight chapters of Hilchot Chametz Matzah. And later in the book, where he deals with Korbanot, he has a whole section called Hilchot Korban Pesach. And there he'll talk about the Korban Pesach of Nisan and Korban Pesach of Iyar for the makeup, for Pesach Sheni. That's the way he does it. And in Sefer HaMitzvot, he does very similar. In the section of the order of the mitzvot that deal with the Chagim, he'll talk about the sanctity of the day, he'll talk about the mitzvah of eating matzah, and so on. That he'll do over there. But when he talks about the Korbanot, he's going to talk about it in the order of the mitzvot that deal with sacrificial activity. And that's mitzvot Nun Hei, Nun Vav, Nun Zayin, and Nun Chet. So Nun Hei and Nun Vav have to do with the Korban Pesach of Nisan. So we're just going to briefly do this and then jump to sources 3-4 and deal with Pesach Sheni. So at the beginning he says, Mitzvah Nun Hei, and the 55th mitzvah, and these are the 55th of the positive mitzvot. Because what the Rambam did was he divided all of 613 into two listings, 248 positives and the 365 don'ts. So this is the 55th on the positive, the pluses. Shetzivanu lishchot se ha-pesach, to slaughter the keves, the sheep of the Korban Pesach, when? B'yom ha-basar mi-Nisan, on the 14th day of Nisan. And this is what the Torah means, v'u'amo yitaleh, v'shachatu oto kol kahal adat Yisrael ben arvayim. But that's the pasuk in Parshat Bo. Umi shavar al tzivui ze v'loy kivu bizmano b'mezid chayav karet bein ish bein isha. Rambam says that although the penalty of karet, which appears in the Chumash here and there, it's not on every avera, v'nichrita hanefesh ahi me'ameha, or ki karet, ti karet, all kinds of expressions of karet. So karet means to be cut off. So what does that mean, being cut off? So there are two understandings. One is the halachic understanding. What does the punishment entail? And that divides into two camps, the Rambam and the world. We have sometimes the Rambam arguing against the world. What we say in the yeshiva world is called the Velt. The Velt. You ever hear of a Velt's Kasha? The Velt's Kasha. It's the world asks. I don't know. I used to read the New York Times. I never saw it there. I never saw that. Right? The Velt's Kasha on Hanukkah is the Beit Yosef. How come there are 8 days Hanukkah, they had oil for 1 day? Hanukkah should be 7 days. That's called a Velt's Kasha. Everybody knows that question. Right? The whole world is buzzing about that question. That's called a Velt's Kasha. So if you ask the Velt, you ask the world, what is karet? And they'll tell you, somebody who unfortunately passed away before the age of 60. That's an opinion. It's an opinion, and it's not made up. The Gemara tells us that one of the Amoraim would celebrate his 60th birthday because it was an indication that he never did an Avera, that he was Chayav Karet. The fact that he just passed the 60th birthday means that Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't strike you down before 60 because you made it to 60. So he celebrated with a birthday party. And this became the genesis of what Hasidim make a tremendous big to-do at the Rebbe's 60th birthday. A very, very big event in the Hasidic world when the Rebbe turned 60. So that's one type of karet. And I say again, that's the world. I remember once, do you remember Dr. Yosef Burg, Zichron de Bracha? I mean, he was the great... from the religious Zionist movement, from the Mizrahi, the Mavdal, member of Knesset for who knows how long, minister for who knows how long. Well, he was a very sensational, interesting Jew. Big Talmud Chacham, by the way. He was also a linguist. He knew languages. He also had a tremendous head. If he met you once, he never forgot you. If he met you 20 years later, he'll tell you where he met you. I experienced this with him. He was unbelievable. So I once had to call him up about some matter of asking him if he would be agreed to have some 7th graders in my yeshiva Chashmonaim interview him about Rav Ben Zion Uziel, the Sephardi chief rabbi who was parallel to Rav Herzog. And in the conversation, we were talking about, he asked me, Adler, he says, you're grandson of Gershon Adler. I said, right, I may have mentioned that to him like 20 years before. And he remembered, he didn't see my face. You know, sometimes you associate the face. He just heard the name. And he's already put my whole family together. He knew my uncle from Berlin. He knew this from there. And some cousins at Tirat Tzvi. The whole Mishpachtologia unfolds. And I hardly knew the man, right? It's unbelievable. So he says, Atamadaber Yiddish. I said, yeah, that Yiddish. I speak Yiddish. See, we were talking about Poland. We were talking about Galicia. Because I told him family's from Galicia. So we were talking about the town called Rzeszów, which he says, Rzeszów, he says, you know, the Goyim riefen das Rzeszów. The Goyim call it Rzeszów. Oh, but the Welt, the world, calls it Reiche. You know what I mean when I say the Welt? The Welt is us. You know, the little shtiebel of Jews. Shtiebel of Jews. We. The Goyim call it Rzeszów, but the Welt. We are the Welt. We are covered a different name. We call it Reiche, right? The Welt. It's an unbelievable line. So the Rambam says everybody has the Welt understands that Karet is dying before 60 and it's to be celebrated. The Rambam says Karet means loss of Olam Haba. Loss of Olam Haba. That's a much more higher plateau of an onesh. While you may not feel it on this world, but a Jew who believes in Olam Haba, that's not a small onesh at all. That's big. So those are the two halachic understandings of karet. Then there's a more hashkafa, philosophical understanding, and that is, you're cut off from the people, which means you're inviting assimilation upon yourself and your family. V'nichrita hanefesh ahi me'ameha. And it's very interesting that the Torah did not slap on karet on everything, just on a few things. And it's these few things that even Jews who are not devoutly shomrei Torah mitzvot, at least these things, whether they understand the halachic process or not is irrelevant, but there's something in the psyche of the Jew that says, don't give up on this, like fasting on Yom Kippur and making a brit milah for a baby. Right? These are things that a Jew, a secular Jew, will also do. Now, why will he do it? Ask him. Because of the Rambam Shita on Kareim. No. Because it's the traditional thing to do. My grandfather did that. Whatever. There's a certain feeling that, you know, how can you eat on Yom Kippur? You know, like. So these are Isurei Karet. So we know that most of the Isurei Karet are don'ts. Don't do this, don't do that. And if you do it, it's Karet. On the non-performance of two positive mitzvahs, this Karet. One is Brit Milah, and one is eating the Korban Pesach. Not eating Korban Pesach in its time. But obviously, only for a person who had the possibility. So we don't have to worry. No Beit HaMikdash. Of course we should worry there's no Beit HaMikdash. But we don't have to worry that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to accuse us of not eating Korban Pesach because we had no opportunity to eat Korban Pesach. So it's called oynus. It's, we were in an unfortunate situation. And Brit Milah, the Rambam says, a person has a whole lifetime to make sure that he did a Brit. And if he dies without a Brit, then he lost his Olam Haba. And that's one of the Rambam's proofs that Karet is Olam Haba. Because you have an entire lifetime to correct it and still have, even as an adult, some type of Brit Milah. So the Rambam says here that not eating the Korban Pesach in its time, b'mezid, deliberately, then it's Chayav Karet. Because if it's shogeg, inadvertent or honest, you were forced, you couldn't get to Beit, whatever. So there's no chiyuv karet. And this mitzvah is bein ish bein isha, which means men and women have the obligation of Korban Pesach. And not just to have the Korban Pesach slaughtered, but to have the Korban Pesach eaten on the night of the Seder. Having said that, the pasuk says, al matzot umbrorim yochluhu, you have to eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah morah. And as we remember from Leila Seder, the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzir Mitzrayim, talking about the events of Exodus from Egypt, is linked to Pesach Matzah Morah. B'shah she Matzah Morah munachim lefanecha. V'gadat alavincha v'yomahu b'avur zeh. B'shah she Matzah Morah munachim lefanecha. The old version was B'shah she Pesach Matzah Morah munachim lefanecha. So it means that women, in spite of the fact that Leila Seder is a time-bound mitzvah, it comes once a year, and women should be exempt. They're not exempt. They're obligated biblically in the mitzvah of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim because they're obligated biblically in the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, which is linked to the matzah and the maror and the Korban Pesach. So that's an important statement, that with regard to Pesach, Korban Pesach in Nisan, women are involved. This is going to impact about what the Rambam's opinion is going to be about Pesach Sheni for a woman who wasn't in Yerushalayim, was derech richoka. That's a pasuk in Parshat Balotcha. How far do you have to be outside Yerushalayim to be considered derech richoka? So the absolute halachic definition is a day's travel. But then the Mishnah gives us coordinates in terms of the radius around Yerushalayim. West of Yerushalayim is Modi'in. Is Modi'in. The Modi'in area, if you're still within Modi'in, if you're before Modi'in, then you're still considered in the framework of Yerushalayim. You're derech krova. And if you're beyond, if you're already in Tel Aviv, so you are derech rechoka. So if you're in Tel Aviv for Pesach, you're not there for Pesach, and then you're going to have the opportunity for Pesach Sheni in Chodesh Iyar. So that's derech rechoka. The only problem is, while the Mishnah gives us these coordinates of locations, the Mishnah also teaches us that it's really a situation of travel of one day. And then the Mishnah tries to figure out, where are the places that would take you for one day travel? One day travel? I can make it to Sydney, Australia in a day. All you have to do is have the flight schedule, you know, that to coordinate it. And you can do it. You can go a lot of places in 24 hours. I mean, my son made it from the house in Ramot to Chashmonaim to the yeshiva in 25 minutes. I told him that was too fast. So he told me he's a pilot. Okay, said that. So, you know, he would get a ticket, not for speeding, but for flying too low. So how that's going to work in Beit Shlishi, we don't know. Beit Din HaGadol is going to have to rule on this. Are we still looking at Modi'in? Or now? Sky's the limit. I mean, a day's travel. What does it mean a day's travel from Yerushalayim? But whatever it is, so hang in there. We'll listen to the Beit Din HaGadol. The Sanhedrin will give us an opinion as to this. What derech rechoka? Tamei, we're our Tamei mate. We don't have Paraduma. So that's going to have to be revived as well. Then in source number 2, the Rambam tells us something about the eating of the Korban Pesach on the night of the Seder. Amitzah Nun Vav 56, Shetzivanu le'echol keves ha-Pesach le'el 15 b'nisan, b'tna'av ha-nizkarim, V'hushiyet sli has to be roasted on the open fire. V'sheyachel b'vayet echa, v'sheyachel im matzah u'maror. She eat it together with matzah and maror. Because it says, al matzot u'marim yachlu. And it brings the requisite pasuk, v'achlu et ha-basar ha-layla hazeh, tzliyesh u'matzot u'marim yachlu. And then he says, well, maybe you're going to ask a question, a methodological question. Ulai yakshe alai makshe, v'yomar, lama timne achilat pesach matzah u'maror mitzvah achat? ולא תמנה אותם שלוש מצוות ושתי אכילת מצה מצווה ואכילת מרור מצווה ואכילת פסח מצווה. הנה, Rambam says, I just put down now as one mitzvah the eating of Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. So you're going to come and ask me a question. How come you didn't use three spots in the listing of the 613, in the listing of the 248 positive? One is to eat the Korban Pesach, one is to eat Matzah, one is to eat Maror. So the answer is, two out of three are listed, and they are Pesach and Matzah. But he goes on to explain that Maror is not an independent mitzvah. Maror is only to be as a mitzvah as part of the eating of the Korban Pesach. Or to use the language of the Lamdanim, it's ne'echal im ha-Pesach. It's eaten to be eaten with the Pesach. It's not an independent mitzvah. And only after the destruction of Second Beit Mikdash, Chazal revived the idea of eating Maror as a rabbinic mitzvah, just no different than lighting Hanukkah candles or reading the Megillah on Purim. It's a rabbinic mitzvah to eat Maror today, but there never was a biblical mitzvah to eat Maror. Never. It was to eat Maror together with the Korban Pesach, and I always like to give the example of eating chazeret, chrein, with gefilte fish, right? Yeah, nobody ever sits and eats a scoop of chrein, right? I never, don't tell me you do it, but you do it. Rivka does it. You do a lot of things. You know? You like chareim. Some people like maror. That's where now I understand where your sharp comments come from. It's your overdose on chareim. Gotcha. Okay. See? There you go. Okay. So the mitzvah of maror is not to be counted as an independent mitzvah because it's linked to the eating of the Korban Pesach. And that's why it's all together literally in one halachic sandwich, like Hillel, came kaya korech matzah umaror biyachad lekayim ashenemar al matzot umarim yachlu. But matzah happens to be independent mitzvah because it says ba'erev tochlu matzot. There's an independent pasuk which obligates us to eat matzah as a biblical mitzvah. To be fair, this is subject to a dispute in the Gemara Masechta Pesachim Daf Kuf Kaf Amud Bet between Rava and Rav Acha. Rava says exactly what we just said now. There's an independent biblical mitzvah to eat matzah, and so even without Beit HaMikdash, we still have matzah as a biblical mitzvah. But Rav Acha does not interpret that pasuk Be'erev Tochlu Matzot as an independent mitzvah, and the only thing that we have on Pesach Leila Seder is to eat the matzah with the Korban Pesach, just like we're eating the maror with the Korban Pesach. So according to this Rav Acha, there is no listing of matzah as an independent mitzvah. But the Rambam ultimately decides, and according to Rava, that there's an independent mitzvah of matzah. So that's why he goes on a diatribe here, explaining why maror doesn't have an independent place in the list, because maror clearly is not part of the mitzvah. And now we jump to the subject at hand, source number three. Pesach Sheni. And it's the very next mitzvah in the book of Sefer Mitzvot, mitzvah 57, Nun Zayin. By mitzvah Nun Zayin, he, Shetzivanu Lishchot Pesach Sheni, Mi Shenimna Mimenu Pesach Rishon. Person who is denied by circumstance from offering the partaking in Pesach Korban Pesach in Nisan has another opportunity. Right? In the academic language here, we call it Moed Bet. Means when you have exams season, so sometimes you couldn't make it for the first set of exams, and a month later you can do it again. Moed Beit, it's called. Lo amro yitalez, Torah says in Parshat Balotcha, b'chodesh hasheni, b'arba'asar yom ben arba'im, yasu oto, the same date, the 14th of Iyar, and you slaughter the Korban Pesach in the afternoon hours, and it's prepared to be eaten on the night of the 15th. Tonight would be the night that the Korban Pesach Sheni would be eaten with matzah and maror. But there's a fundamental difference between Pesach Sheni and Pesach Rishon. What would that Jew in Tel Aviv who couldn't make it to Yerushalayim when Beit HaMikdash stood, how did he observe the Yom Tov in Nisan? Exactly the way we do. 7 days of Chag HaMatzot. First day is Yom Tov, the seventh day is Yom Tov, the intermediary day is Chol HaMoed. He would have a Seder, he just wouldn't have the Korban Pesach. He would have 7 days of no chametz. comes Iyar, the only thing that he has to make up is the Korban Pesach. So it's not a day of Yom Tov. There's no Isa Malocha. Even for the person who's going to be eating the Korban Pesach tonight, he can do it while he's, well, I was going to say watching Mabat, but there is no more watching Mabat. It's over. It's history. Right. Whatever you want to do, you want to, you know, whatever, you want to read the paper, you're eating the Korban Pesach, and you can put the Korban Pesach on matzah, maror, and a lachmania from Angel's Bakery. Nice, fresh lachmania. Because there's no Isur Chametz. There's no Isur Chametz on Pesach Sheni for anybody. So there's no Bal Yireh, Bal Yimatzeh, you don't have to bedikas Chametz, you don't have to sell the Chametz, you don't have nothing. It's a regular weekday. It's just that the Torah gives you the opportunity to eat the Korban Pesach a month later with matzah and maror. And this is what led to the minhag of the Vilna Goyen. Before the Vilna Goyen, they never saw anybody have this, but the Vilna Goyen, that just as we eat another piece of matzah towards the end of the Seder, we call it Afikoymen, Zeich the Korban Pesach, so on Pesach Sheni, just to remember, there's such a halachic idea, Pesach Sheni, to eat a Kazayas matzah. That's why I said, who had matzah bread this morning? Besides me, you know, and a few others, right? Right? Minagagro. You don't have to do it. Don't worry. Don't worry. You don't have to. You start asking Shailas now. It could be Yoitza with egg matzahs. For this minig, huh? Seder. Shmura. Does that have to be Shmura? Right?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
If the Isser of Chorus is such a, either both because of Mila, which is therefore they could do it any time until never, until no longer. Why wouldn't Korban Pesach have been any time other than just Pesach Sheni?
So that's a gzirat hakatuv. I have no better answer. The Kadosh Baruch Hu ordained. The story evolves by there were some people. There's some people who tamei made, and they came to Moshe Rabbeinu knocking on the door. Once, as we say in this country, low fare. And low fare doesn't mean low prices on the airlines. Low fare. It means low fare. It's not fair, right? Why lama nigara? Why are we going to lose out? Levilti akriv korban pesach b'mo'ado. Isn't that not right? We want to do korban pesach. And the Gemara tries to discuss who might be the people. It's anonymous people. It's anonymous people. Who might they be? In a few moments, I'll try to delineate the three opinions in the Gemara who they might be. But they, because of migalgalin schuta idei zakai, Kadosh Baruch Hu would have given Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah anyway. But they brought it about through the story. We hear about it. So this is a gzerat hakatuv. Take two a month later, and that's it. There's no take three. Similar to if you forget the daven shacharit for whatever reason, so you can daven mincha twice. You can't make up the shacharis by ma'ariv any longer. You get a one shot deal of moed bet. The next opportunity. So the next opportunity of the 14th is Iyar. Sivan is too late. That's it. It doesn't work. That's what the Torah says. Okay. So what you have here is that in source number 3 is the mitzvah of slaughtering the Korban Pesach for those who just didn't partake in the Korban Pesach Rishon. And this is what it says. B'chodesh ha'shini b'arba'asayom ben arba'im yasu oto. V'kan yesh l'makshesh yikshe alai. Now another, you're going to ask another kasha. And he's asking these methodological questions. V'yomar elai, lama ze timna Pesach sheni, ze soter masha hakdamta b'shorash hashvi'i. One said that before the Rambam got even started in this book, he wrote 14 introductory comments of ground rules. Why a certain pasuk would be a mitzvah, why a certain pasuk won't be a mitzvah. One of his ground rules is that details of a mitzvah are not counted as separate mitzvot. So wouldn't that Pesach sheni just be a detail in the whole world of the Korban Pesach? And here the Rambam sticks his neck out and brings a dispute in the Gemara Masechet Pesachim as to the nature of Pesach Sheni. The Gemara begins, and I think we even have it here, most of it. Not all of it, so I'm going to give it to you by heart, to some of the introduction. The Gemara begins by saying, what happens if a convert, a goy, converts to Judaism between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni? Right? Yom Atzmaut, on the 5th of Iyar, comes a Jew. Or Rosh Chodesh Iyar comes a Jew. But it's after the first Pesach, but it's before Yud Daled, the 14th of Iyar. Does he have an obligation of Pesach Sheni or not?
Yeah.
Or, Katan Shehigdil, Kids Bar Mitzvah. A Kids Bar Mitzvah, between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni. So does he have an obligation of Pesach Sheni? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So how are we to understand this? You're saying yes. Anybody saying no? We have no. We have a machloket here. Great! Because this is a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Natan. What it really is the fundamental machloket. So I'm going to illustrate first, and then we'll define it. Shalo neida mitzarot. Everybody knows that if a person sustains a family loss, that he or she will have to sit shiva. So until from the moment of the awareness that the person passed away, the member of one of the seven relatives passed away, until after the kfura, so the person has a din of onen, aninut kicks in, where a person is exempt from many of the positive mitzvot. He doesn't daven, doesn't put on tefillin, doesn't, no birkat hamazon, no brachot, no nitila yadayim, all kinds of things that a person doesn't do. What if a person gets that information at 6:30 in the morning today? Gets a phone call from wherever, and the person didn't daven shachris yet. Why? Because he davens at the 6:45. Legitimate. He goes to daven every morning, 6:45. But he's not going to daven now because he's in aninut. The levaya is at 2:00 PM, comes to home to the Beit Evel 3:30. It's mincha time. Does he have to make up the shachris? Does he have to daven another shmonesre for shachris that he didn't do? What? He was potter, you said. Scenario two, he got the phone call at 3:00 AM. 3:00 AM. Way before the break of dawn. And the levaya is 2:00 PM. Same story. He's not going to daven shachar. He's not going to put on tefillin. And now it's mincha time. Does he have an obligation to daven shmoneh esrei again? In case number one, the answer is yes. In case number two, the answer is no. Why? Because in case number one, when he heard the news at 6:30 in the morning, he was already obligated to daven shacharit and obligated for all the mitzvot. Except he didn't do it because at this juncture, he's now become an onen. He can't do it anymore. Because he was going to daven at 6:45. But at 6:30, he could have davened. He was obligated to daven. So when you have an obligation, but now the halakha binds your hands, ties your hands, so now you can talk about tashlumen, makeup. You can make it up. But if you heard the news at 3:30 in the morning, you were never obligated in Shacharit, so now there's no Tashlumen. What are you making up? You can't make up something that you aren't obligated. The machloket between Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Natan is whether or not Pesach Sheni is a makeup or not. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says it's not a makeup. It has nothing to do with a makeup that you were obligated in Pesach Rishon. And because for whatever reason, I don't care about the story now. I'm not a nudnik. I don't care about the story. You didn't do Pesach Rishon for whatever reason. Now you have to do Pesach Sheni, provided you were obligated to Pesach Rishon. But if you were never obligated in Pesach Rishon, then why should you do Pesach Sheni? A goy in Nisan, a goy who becomes a convert in Iyar, beginning of Iyar, Rosh Chodesh Iyar, certainly was not obligated in Yud Dalet Nisan to do Korban Pesach. So what shayachut does he have to Pesach Sheni? He should be exempt completely. Completely. And indeed, if you view Pesach Sheni as tashlumen, as makeup, then the goy is exempt from Pesach Sheni. Because he wasn't there in Nisan. But if you adopt an opinion that Pesach Sheni has nothing to do with makeup, but it's a brand new halachic entity, or to use the phrase that we have in the headline, regel b'fnei atzmo, it's an independent yomtov. It was designed by a Kadosh Baruch Hu for anybody who, for whatever reason under the sun, didn't bring a Korban Pesach. Why didn't you bring Korban Pesach? You were Tomei. Why didn't you bring Korban Pesach? I was in Tel Aviv. Why did you bring Korban Pesach? I was a goy. I don't care. If you didn't bring Korban Pesach, and now you're Jewish, and Iyar, you have to bring a Pesach Sheni. It's called Regel B'fnei Atzmo. So too, why did you bring Korban Pesach in Nisan? I wasn't Bar Mitzvah yet. I wasn't obligated. Vakasha, you have to bring Korban Pesach in Chodesh Iyar. That's what the Gemara says. Either Katan Shehigdil ben Shnei Pesachim or Goy Shenitgayer ben Shnei Pesachim. According to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, if it's Regel B'fnei Atzmo, if it's an independent Yom Tov, I don't care what the circumstances were in Nisan. As long as, in reality, you aren't there for Korban Pesach, you now have an obligation to Pesach Sheni. Rabbi Natan says, no. It's only designed for those who were there in Nisan, but didn't do it in reality. In fact, for reasons but they were obligated. They were obligated. And they have a makeup. And Rabbi Natan really calls it Tashlumen. There's actually a third opinion that's almost a corollary of the second of Rabbi Natan. It's a makeup, but it goes beyond makeup. It's kapara. It's atonement for not being there in Nisan. The second opinion just says it's tashlumen. It's a makeup. The third opinion says, what a terrible thing. You were sitting in Tel Aviv on Pesach, on Erev Pesach. You should have been in Yerushalayim. So you need a makeup with a kapara. So it's called takanto, in Hebrew, tikkun. So, but both the second and third opinions agree that Pesach Sheni is a derivative of Pesach Rishon. It's only there for those who had the obligation for Pesach Rishon. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says, I don't care what the deal is on Pesach Rishon. You weren't there, you were a goy, you were a kid. Now Pesach Sheni, you're here, you have a mitzvah. It's regel b'fnei atzmo. So you have two out of three opinions saying that it is connected to Pesach Rishon, and one out of three opinions that it's disconnected to Pesach Rishon. It's a regel b'fnei atzmo. So how does the Rambam paskin? Like the one out of the three, right? Who hits the roof? The Ravid, Rabbi Avraham ben David, says, I don't get it. It's two out of three. Two out of three opinions are saying that Pesach Sheni connects to Pesach Rishon. Why does he pick the minority? You'll talk to the Rambam about that. But the Rambam adopts this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that Pesach Sheni is an independent mitzvah, and because it's an independent mitzvah, it can be listed in the listing of Taryag of the 613. But according to the other opinion, then we would not only is the situation that a goy would not bring Pesach Sheni and a katan would not bring Pesach Sheni, because I'm sorry. According to the other opinion that it's a makeup, right? So a goy would not bring Pesach Sheni and a katan would not bring Pesach Sheni. It's only for a Jew who was derech rechoka, far away, or tamei. So they would have Pesach Sheni because it's a makeup. Then if it's a makeup, then it's a detail in Korban Pesach. And as a detail in Korban Pesach, it would not enjoy its own space in the listing of the 613. But the Rambam challenges this and says it's an independent mitzvah and it's detached from Pesach Rishon and hence enjoys a spot in the Pesach in the listing of 613. Just as a interesting proof, I don't want to say who's right or wrong here, but at least favoring the view against the Rambam is the fact that when we have Kriyat HaTorah leaning on Pesach, so unlike Sukkot, where it's a Bal Koyrish dream on Chol HaMoed, where you read the same three psukim four times around. So if you came, because it's the same three psukim of the Korban from Parshas Pinchas, Uviyam Hashenu, Uviyam Shlishi, Yom Ravi, and it's the same trope and everything. So if you came ill-prepared, by Shlishi, you must probably got it right. Right? After the people corrected you, the first two, Al-Koyan and Levi. By Shlishi, certainly by Ravi, you got it right. That's a Bal Koyrish dream. To lean on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. But Chol HaMoed Pesach is a challenge because every single day is a different leaning. Every day of Chol HaMoed. The last Aliyah Revi is the same, okay, but the first three Aliyot, you know, one day it comes from Emor and the next day it comes from, there's even a phrase of Mishoch Tura, Kaddish Bekospa, Pesach something. There's a remez of all the days so you can remember which days you read. The last day of Chol HaMoed, we read from Parshat Bahalotcha on Pesach Sheni. And the question is, why are we reading Pesach Sheni on Pesach Rishon? The answer is, it shows that Pesach Rishon has something to do with Pesach Sheni, and Pesach Sheni has something to do with Pesach Rishon. So there is a little bit of a proof here, maybe not such a terribly strong proof, but it's a what's called a remez, an allusion to this view, that Pesach Sheni does connect to Pesach Rishon. And a little bit of an interesting tidbit that our Rebbe, the Rav Zichron LeBracha, said on this whole story, it also impacts on Sfirat HaOmer of a goy who becomes a ger between Pesach and Shavuot, and a boy who's bar mitzvah between Pesach and Shavuot. What about Sfirat HaOmer? So there happens to be a machloket whether each day of Sfirat HaOmer is an independent mitzvah. And by the way, the Rambam adopts that opinion, which means according to the Rambam, if you forgot one day or you forgot 48 days, you count whatever day you're counting with a bracha. That's the Rambam's view. And if a goy became a ger on Erev Shavuos, he counts the 49th day with a bracha. If a kid's bar mitzvah on the 49th day of Sfira before Shavuos, on Erev Shavuos, he counts with a bracha. But the popular opinion is in accordance with the view of the Halachot Gedolot, 7th century of the Gaonim, who says that you have to count all 49 days in order to really fulfill the mitzvah, to mimot yena. Therefore, if you forgot to count at night and you catch yourself in the morning and count without a bracha, fine, you caught yourself. And then tonight you can continue counting with a bracha. That's the popular minhag. But if you 24 hours you went and you didn't count at all, then you've ruptured the tmimot yena and you continue counting only with a bracha. And of course, what's recommended is that... I'm sorry? Without a bracha. But recommended is that in shul, you listen to the chazan, whoever says the bracha, you answer amen, because that's what he's really doing, is being mighty. That's the minhag, by the way, why the rav of the shul counts the sefiras ayma, because you hope that the rabbi at least never messed up. And by the way, there are poskim to talk about, and what if the rabbi messed up? Why? Because one Friday night he davened at the early minyan, and at the early minyan Friday night they don't count the sefira yet, and he forgot to count at night, and blew in, you know, he didn't remember the whole Shabbos, and now it's Matzah Shabbos, and he remembers, oh, you didn't count. So this can be a very embarrassing moment for the Rav and Shul for the next 3-4 weeks of sefira ayma. So the answer is that he's allowed to count with the bracha. He doesn't have to tell the chazan or somebody else, Tov, I didn't count anymore, I'm out of the game. You know, like, that's an embarrassing thing for a Rav to publicly admit. So he would be allowed to make the bracha and rely on the Rambam's opinion that each day is an independent mitzvah because of Kvod HaBriyot, because his dignity is at stake. So protect him from that embarrassment. You'd be allowed to do that. But the reason, that's why the Rav makes the bracha, counts the ayma, and everybody else can, and he's being mitzi anybody who, forgot. And fine, okay. But what about a ger? So according to this opinion, that you have to count all 49 days to be motiena, so the ger won't count with the bracha that year. He becomes a ger in Rosh Chodesh Iyar, he counts without a bracha until next year. Next year he'll make a bracha. Same thing with a bar mitzvah boy. Who says that? Rav Avadi Yosef. He has in his tshuva that a bar mitzvah boy, a very strange cheetah, he says from Pesach until his bar mitzvah, let's say on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, he can count with a bracha. Why? Because chinuch. Chinuch. Just like he can do any mitzvah with a bracha at age 10 and age 11 and age 12. Why can't he fulfill mitzvah to Sviyas Ayma with a bracha? So he counts with a bracha. Comes his bar mitzvah day, he finishes the counting now without a bracha. Because Rav Avadya said, now, what he did before, non-relevant. That was chinuch. There's no bracha levatola that he counted with a bracha. But now, he didn't count as somebody who was obligated in the full 49 days. So he's only left with 39 days or 29 days. So he'll count without a bracha. But the Rav never bought that. The Rav said that the bar mitzvah boy will continue counting with a bracha. Why? Because he said you can connect the 2 or 3 weeks that he counted as a katan, as chinuch, with that which he's going to count after the bar mitzvah, and it's one continuum. Why? Where is it proof that that which he counted as a katan is registered as a mitzvah? He may not have been obligated because he was a katan, but that fact that he did it, it's registered as a bona fide mitzvah and certainly can be connected. He proved it from Korban Pesach, because he said that according to the view that the Rambam says, that a ger who becomes converts between Pesach Rishon and Pesach Sheni, and a katan shigdil, a katan becomes bar mitzvah, will have Pesach Sheni, because I don't care what the story was in Pesach Rishon, it's a new mitzvah, it's regular for the Atzma. But the same Rambam says that in Nisan, which kind of katan are we talking about? We're talking about an orphan. An orphan who has no family unit. He's now alone, and he's observing, he went through Pesach without anybody. He was in a foster home, with, and he didn't do a Seder, whatever. So it can happen, such a sad situation. But if a child is 12 years old and 11 months, and when the family went to Yerushalayim and ordered the Korban Pesach, because what they did was they made Limnuyav, they made the situation of one Shepselah, one sheep, no around for 4 or 5 families. Because all you have to do is eat a Kazayat. So they have to count how many mouths are going to be eating the Korban Pesach. You counted the children also, because the children are also going to eat. So the Rambam says that if they slaughtered the Korban Pesach in Nisan, considering the under bar mitzvah boy in the calculation, then he does not have to bring a Korban Pesach in Pesach Sheni. And from there you see that that which a katan does as an under bar mitzvah boy, but does it l'shem mitzvah, counts as a bona fide mitzvah. And the Rav by extrapolation said, and therefore by Sfirat HaOmer, when the katan counts for 2 weeks, 3 weeks before his bar mitzvah, with a bracha, will continue counting with a bracha until Shavuot, and it's all considered one tmimot. And my last comment will be, if you look at source number four, the Rambam says that because Pesach Sheni is a regel b'fnei atzmo, then the reasons why a woman is obligated to eat the Korban Pesach on Nisan and have matzah and morer and sipu yitzir Mitzrayim does not exist now for Iyar. It's a different arrangement because it's an independent Yom Tov. An independent Yom Tov, that's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama. It's a time-bound mitzvah, and therefore women are exempt. So he says in the last line, she'ein anashim chayavot ba, the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach in Iyar is not relevant for women because they were not obligated, because it's a mitzvah taseh shazman grama, as opposed to what he said in the top source, the third line, bein ish bein isha, and that was with regard to Korban Pesach in Nisan. In Nisan, women are obligated in Korban Pesach because it's all one package deal. It goes together with the matzah and the morer and the sipu yitzir Mitzrayim. But now, being that the Rambam detaches Pesach Sheni from Pesach Rishon, so the old rules kick in, and that is mitzvah taseh shazman grama, and women are really exempt. Of course, having said that, women can partake in it. There's no aveira for a woman if the family were all out of Yerushalayim, and they came to Yerushalayim in Iyar to do the Pesach Sheni. The woman can certainly participate in the eating of the Korban Pesach Sheni, no different than a woman accepting upon herself any other mitzvah taseh shazman grama. And in the case of mitzvah taseh shazman grama, that a woman is exempt and elects to perform it, the only thing left is whether she makes a bracha or not. And that's a dispute between Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam representing Ashkenazi thinking. Rambam believes that there is no bracha. The woman does not make a bracha on shofar, lulav, sukkah, svirat ha'omer, any of the time-bound mitzvot. And the Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, believes, as the Ashkenazi women do, we do make brachot on shofar, sukkah, lulav, svirat ha'omer. And there is a bracha on Korban Pesach, v'tzivanu ala chilat zevach ha'pesach. So the same machloket would kick in if a woman would eat the Korban Pesach even on Pesach Sheni, even though she would be exempt. So according to the Rambam, it would be already without a bracha. What?
She makes a bracha every day.
Which every day? Which bracha?
Of the
Svirat Omer.
Yeah,
Svirat Omer, what Ashkenazi women do. Ashkenazi women do. Sephardi women don't. The Vadya has a whole geschäft about it. All right, so we were yaitza a little bit on Pesach Sheni. And I think next week already and the week after, there'll be two special shiurim for Yom Yerushalayim. Certainly on Yom Yerushalayim, we'll have a shiur that Wednesday morning, but the next week as well, a week before Yom Yerushalayim. And I think it's going to be announced through our tidbits. They had asked me to give some special shiurim on Yerushalayim. Okay, let's see.